government is not our master, it is our servant. Its only power, that which we the people allow it to have.
Liberty Watch is an independent program on KVOI dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master, and operating in the public interest for which the media in this country was designed by exploring controversy. This helps us to resolve our differences peaceably, refining controversy into clarity through investigation, research, interview of experts, and public feedback. Liberty Watch is based in objective reason and is biased towards individual liberty, and so is not the view of the station or anyone but the host, guests, and callers. Liberty Watch operates outside the realm of political correctness, taking no notice at all of race, creed, religion, ethnicity, political affiliation, or orientation, focusing on content of character in eternal vigilance to the free flow of information about government, technology, current events, and our steadfast Constitution. The program is paid, produced, hosted, and operated by Charles Heller, and any mistakes are solely his responsibility. All right, let us get right to it. We have the joy, pleasure, and honor of having back with us Philip Williams. He is the head locally of a company called BBSI, which is a business services organization. They do health insurance. They do compliance with health insurance, right?
Health insurance, payroll, work comp, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and they also are really good at defending people against OSHA, not from the legal aspect, but from the transactional, from the practical aspect of OSHA. They can actually, in an OSHA inspection, they can be the one that does the compliance
conversation.
Yeah,
we'll have the conversation with them, so you don't have to.
Right, there you go, and he is. He won't tell you he's brilliant, but you'll figure it out from listening to him. He's nuclear qualified to run the power plant of a nuclear submarine, and he did that for 7 years, I think. And his joy and pleasure is reading the Federalist Papers. And he brought it up to me to discuss them with him, and he's more studied about it than I am, and it's just a pleasure. We're going to talk about Federalist 70 and a little bit of 68. What is Federalist 70 about, Philip?
70 is the
That mic is extremely directional.
Ah, all right. It's direct.
Mm-hmm.
70 discusses the different possible forms of the executive office. A lot of people, you know, we all grew up with just one president, and there's not a lot of discussion or understanding about how it is we came to have just one president. They actually considered multiple different models, whether that was two folks serving as president or three, or even one person who had to answer to a council. So 70 discusses all of the flaws of all of the various other ideas and how they came to the idea that it just needed to be one person.
Mm-hmm. And this is long, but let me set it up. I'm going to read a whole paragraph of it. It begins with, quote, "There is an idea, which is not without its advocates, that a vigorous executive is inconsistent with the genius of a republican government. The enlightened well-wishers to this species of government must at least hope that the supposition is destitute of foundation, since they can never admit its truth without at the same time admitting the condemnation of their own principles. Energy in the executive is a leading character in the definition of good government. It is essential to the protection of the community against foreign attacks. It is essential to the protection of the community, it is not less essential to the steady administration of the laws, to the protection of property against those irregular and high-handed combinations which sometimes interrupt the ordinary course of justice, to the security of liberty against the enterprises and assaults of ambition, of faction, and of anarchy," unquote. Doesn't that sound a little bit like they're describing the last 3 3/4 years?
Oh man, I was reading this paper over the last 7 8 days,
uh-huh.
It struck me like being tapped in the forehead with a spoon about the warnings that 70 gives about the last 3.5 years. Uh-huh. I mean, you read 70 and you cannot help but reflect on what has happened in the last 3.5 years. There has been no vigorous enforcement of our laws. There has been nothing but pointing at somebody else for being at fault. There's no accountability. It is, and I couldn't help but rejoice in the idea of Doge.
Mm-hmm.
And the effort that Vivek and Elon will be taking on. And in fact, I went on X and pled with them to please read 70, because everything that they are getting ready to do is forewarned in 70. I should say everything that they're getting ready to get rid of is forewarned in 70. It's amazing.
It really is. And it really is. There is no... there is no surprise in it. It's like these guys knew exactly what some of the problems of human nature were.
They were incredible students of human nature. They talk about, I think in one of the earlier ones that we did, they talked about how when men don't have anything else to do, they'll find the most idle reasons to get into disagreements with each other.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, and...
When I look at the Biden administration, you know what I think? You can tell everybody what that is.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, it's been...
That's collision.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad I never heard that one.
No.
You hear that one go off and... it always happens when you're asleep, right?
Right. It screws with your consciousness. I think I just did. Anyway, took you off the track. The next paragraph said, did you have a point you wanted to make?
No, I think it's interesting because you made the note, and I immediately jumped to this because I love the again, the forewarning. A feeble executive implies a feeble execution of government, and a feeble execution is but another phrase for a bad execution, and a government ill executed, whatever its theory. In other words, whether that you're talking about communist, socialist, Republican democracy, whatever you're talking about, a government ill executed, regardless of its theory, must in practice be a bad government. And that's what we've had, right? For the last 3.5 years, we've had bad government. We have not had our national interests protected and looked after overseas. We've not had our national borders cared for properly over the last 3.5 years. We've not had our budget and our own wallets taken care of over the last 3.5 years. And you could argue that the budget problem is probably about 35, 40 years old. I think... interestingly enough, the last time we had a balanced budget was the year I was born. The last time
during the Clinton administration.
That's balanced budget. Excuse me. The last time we didn't have a national debt was the year I was born.
65?
69. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. We didn't have a national. That was during Nixon.
Yeah, it was the last time we had. We actually didn't have a debt. And then we talked ourselves into the idea that we were the greatest nation on earth and could accumulate all the debt we wanted to. But maybe that's
That's modern monetary theory under Keynesian economics.
Yeah,
John Maynard Keynes's work. You know, I had one of the preeminent economists in the United States, a guy named Butch Browning, who is the head of the economics department at Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I have been struggling. I have Modern Monetary Theory by John Maynard Keynes. And I said, this guy was so brilliant. I said, I mean, he was wrong, but he was so smart. He talks above the head of everybody. That's way post-PhD work. And Butch said, Charles, no, it isn't. It's gobbledygook, and that's why you can't understand it. It's not that you ain't smart enough. It's that he was just too smart by half in the way he languaged it to make you think you were dumb.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize till Butch Browning said that it wasn't a deficit on my part that I couldn't understand. I thought it was.
No, no, it's just some folks can just run circles around you, and they get you all tied up in a tangentially related theory that in isolation is just good enough to make you question what you think you know.
As they say in Spanish, so. Oy vey. All right, stand by in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios. We'll be back with Philip Williams. First quarter of the interview is already over, and we haven't really scratched past the surface. We will when we get back. We're going to dive right into it. I'll cut the music short on the other end. No, I won't, because you're going to get a kick out of that song.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Stand by.
Hey, guys, I got to go make a service call. I'll be right back.
This is going to take a while.
Nah, I won't be long.
Permission to come aboard?
Permission granted.
Hey, can you guys beam me to the engine compartment?
This is the filthiest oil I've ever seen. I'm amazed they made it this far.
Hey, Captain Kirk. Good to see you again.
Thanks for the quick fix, Mike.
Man, that oil was really muddy.
You are perfection.
Remember, you gotta change the oil every 33 million light years.
Fascinating.
Aye, Captain, you take your car to perfection as well?
Whenever I've been Tucson, I always take my car to perfection, where they take me boldly, where no man has taken me before.
Hey, guys, thanks for everything, but I gotta get back to perfection.
Hey, Mike, welcome back. Any hope for the Enterprise?
You know, it's gonna live long and prosper. Perfection Auto Works is an enterprise that will go to the ends of the earth to service your vehicle and even an oil change in space. Call 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
In the desert, rainwater is liquid gold falling from the sky onto your roof. But how do you keep it? Southern Arizona Rain Gutters installs rain gutters and water storage tanks attractively on your property to water your plants or sustain your family. If municipal water were interrupted, how long would you last? Monsooner or later, you'll find out. SouthernArizonaRainGutters.com. That's SouthernArizonaRainGutters.com.
Hi, folks. This is Rob from Blade Runner Knives, inviting you to come see our great selection of popular brands of everyday carry knives, hunting knives, axes, swords, and we are especially proud of our custom and local pieces. We also have a speedy sharpening service. We're at 907 West Prince Road at the corner of Prince and Fairview, around on the Fairview side. Blade Runner sharpens knives fast.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Never give up on the power of the Swap Shop.
Who knows? And I mean, somebody could have had a whole bunch of old pagers laying around, and they called the swap shop and said, can we buy them? We got an order for some pagers. We just need to work on them a little bit first.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Hi, it's Mark Levin. Liberty Watch on KVOI is dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master. Sounds like Charles has been reading my books. Congratulations on 20 years on KVOI, Charles.
We go to sea on diesel boats, they call us Bubblehead. Our blood is laced with diesel smoke, we're sailors to the end. Our diesels wind through the salty brine until we take her deep. Then we turn her loose on battery juice, then we all go to sleep. Diesel boats forever. Hear the diving klaxon sound. Diesel boats forever. Take her deep, take her down.
That is the great submarine sailor Tommy Cox, who left us last year, and his song Diesel Boats Forever.
Yeah, diesel boats smell forever.
Well, so do the nukes.
Yeah.
They still have a diesel smell and
yes,
the hydraulic oil smell.
Yeah, I would come home from sea and, gone for a couple of months. You miss your wife and she looks at you and says, not till you shower. And you can smell that stuff
right
in the water rolling out of your hair like you've never imagined.
Yep.
I mean, in spite of the shampoo you're using and everything.
Doesn't matter.
Yep.
It gets in the pores. I love that odor, and whenever I go to visit one, I've got one in. I'm going up to the Blueback this next summer. Okay. I'm going up to the Blueback in Portland, and I get about, oh, I don't know, 2 meters, 3 meters from the hatch. And that diesel and the combination diesel and hydraulic oil wafts out of the companionway. And I go, man, I'm home.
it is instant. That smell instantly takes you back.
It does. So takes me back to being 17 and working on silver sides. Anyway,
that was one of my collateral duties on the ship. I was the emergency diesel operator.
Oh,
yeah.
No kidding. So you really do know it. Okay. Yeah. Federalist number 70 goes on to say, quote, the ingredients which constitute energy in the executive are first unity, secondly duration, and thirdly adequate provision for its support, fourthly competent powers. What's an example of that kind of energy and leadership in your lifetime?
Well, my two favorites so far are Reagan and Trump. I think they did well at it, mostly because they were the folks that were willing to enforce the existing laws. Really, at the end of the day, that's where it comes down to. Are you going to support the existing laws of the country? Because that's actually what the executive is, right? Mm-hmm. All of the debate and the creation of the rules, if folks don't like the rules of the game, it's one of two things. The rules were developed either by Congress or... it's kind of like NASCAR for those of you that used to watch it way back in the day. Like if you watched it in say early 90s back, Swerve and Irvin and those kind of guys were on the track. They had templates, right? And every car had 13 templates and you could play with the body in between the templates, but it had to match at the template. And so what we have going on right now is we have the executive branch playing with the laws in between the rules and the template, right? And the expectation is that the executive should enforce the laws that are on the books.
Mm-hmm.
And if folks don't like what that executive is doing, then it's up to them to call their senator, call their representative, get a bunch of their friends to call their senators and their representatives and start talking to Congress about changing the laws. And that's one of the things that that I talk to folks a lot about. And, you know, because immigration is going to be a hot topic over the next 4 or 5 years, like it or not, just like it has been for the last 4 or 5. But the reality is that nobody has actually proposed any sort of meaningful change to the immigration problem.
Well, the changes they have proposed have involved letting a lot of people in here and then regularizing them. And
it was only going to be 1.8 million. It's not that many.
Yeah,
per year.
Right. Let me give you a pointed example. In 1975, during the presidency of Gerald Ford,
mm-hmm.
the SS Mayaguez was seized, I think, by the North Koreans. I'm trying to think. It was a cargo ship.
I was trying to figure out how to read a clock and count money in Mr. Seamus' second grade class.
What happened was, though, is that Ford immediately sent the Marine Corps to rescue the crew of the Mayaguez, and they got all of them. It cost us 19 Marines to do it, but we rescued every crew member. And it was instant. I mean, as soon as the Maya goes, because the memory of USS Puebla was fresh in our minds still from 1967, I believe. And Ford said, "I'm not going to have that on my watch." And he sent the United States Marines, and they blazed that. They cut a path about a half mile wide and through wherever it was that the people were being held, and got all of them back.
And that's a significant demonstration of a couple of the traits that they talk about in 70, because it requires, you know, the office of the executive, the chief magistrate, the president,
mm-hmm.
requires that the person make decisions quickly,
mm-hmm.
and that they dispatch people to execute on those instructions very, very quickly. It's their job to protect our country, and not just materially and not just our borders, but also our standing on the world stage. And that's one of the reasons why we ended up having a single person in the office of the presidency, because one of the arguments as you read through 70 is that all of the debate, the discussion, the angst and negotiation and all of that has already occurred in Congress. That's where the law was made, right?
Mm-hmm.
The office of the presidency is not a place for debate or conversation about the laws of the country. Right. It's not a place to debate our standing in the world.
Yes, it's not legislative or judicial. It's to execute.
Right. Execute. It's kind of partly in the
right in the name.
Yeah. And so what Ford did there was he made a decision, the kind of decision you would want him to make, and he quickly went and got our guys and our ship back, right?
Right, from Kampuchea, which is now part of Cambodia. I was wrong. I said North Korea earlier. But yeah.
And also secrecy, right? He didn't tell everybody, here I come. He dispatched the team. Go get our guys. Go bring them home.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the deal. And if you've got a team of two or a team of three, then what happens is that the office of the presidency devolves into a situation where they are really self-interested, right? And the office of the presidency is supposed to be accountable to the people. It's actually, you know, our other topic for today, which is 68. But right. it was spoken of in 70, which is at the end of the day, the president needs to have a responsibility to the people.
Well, I think the current administration is more worried what people think of them in terms of legacy than they are the responsibility. In fact, if you saw what happened with the president's son, it's the ultimate in evading responsibility. And now they're talking about preemptively pardoning Cheney and Fauci.
Yeah,
it's like,
I love the memes
somebody
that we're seeing
that
right now.
I'm sorry, what?
I love the memes that we're seeing on that right now. Like, if you're not guilty, what do you need a preemptive pardon for?
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like it or not, and that's sitting on this side of the aisle where we just watched a guy fight for his life in four different courtrooms around the country, and he was winning.
Yeah.
He was winning. You know, and there was nobody there to pardon him.
Nope.
So, you know, but...
Well, in the New York case, I don't think they can, nor in the Georgia case. There is no presidential... Unless they were to elevate the case to federal court and make it a federal case, then dismiss it, there is no way to do that because the presidential pardon authority doesn't extend into the states.
Right, it doesn't. But what they're dealing with right now is the internal pressure of the money centers in the Democratic Party. You're already seeing... folks saying, well, the Biden library is going to be a lot smaller than originally planned because the donors aren't going to fund a guy who pardoned his son.
Yeah, it's going to be built in his garage next to his Corvette and his classified papers.
Well, thankfully, he's already got the documents then, right?
Yeah. We're at the bottom of the hour. Let's go ahead and take that break now, and then let's start talking a little bit about federal. Did you have more on 70?
Oh, we have tons more on 70.
Oh, well, then go right ahead and we'll go to the bottom of the hour.
No, if we got to go to break, we can go to break.
No, we don't have to, but I was going to do it early and then switch topics. But what else do you want to say about 70?
Well, it was really, really interesting because I went through and I made a list, actually, of all of the different concerns that they had about the different models. And I came up with slow response in emergencies, which is kind of, you already alluded to that. And then... if you had a couple of people, we mentioned that they would act in their own interests. They two or more, you start having an accountability problem, right? It's the
he said, she said.
Yeah, don't look at me. It's the other guy. One of the models that they actually looked at was having a singular president who reported to a council or had to act on the guidance of the council. And they said, well, that's not really going to work because the president's going to say, don't look at me, my counsel told me to do it.
Isn't that what they call a commissar?
Right. Well, you've got the word consulari, but I think in the sense that American pop culture might know the word consulari, those guys were fairly fast decision makers, and there was a set of rules that were followed.
Yeah, and there was sort of an iron hand to the way the phone rules were followed, too.
Yeah, but they didn't mess around with making decisions. So then you get on to things like if you had the group, right? If you had the council, they were worried that you could have a cabal that had malicious intent, right? And they could manipulate the president into acting and conducting themselves in certain way in certain areas. They also felt that if you had two, let's say you had two, you get back into the Roman era near the end where, mm-hmm. you know, they had two Caesars, if you will, and they controlled different parts of the country.
Right. One from closer in and one for farther away.
Yep.
And then so what you end up with is basically a president and a prime minister.
Yeah. And then we get into the whole faction problem, which, right. you know, we've talked about earlier.
And funny how Pirates of the Caribbean comes up underneath this discussion. So stand by. We're going to be back after this at the bottom of the hour in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios with Philip Williams.
Hello, honey. I'm doing the best I can. I'm in a blizzard. I'll be home as soon as I can. Of course I'll be careful. All right. See you in a few. Bye. There's a car broke down on the side of the road. I gotta get home. No, I gotta help him. Hey, Mac, you okay?
Hey, you're not with the Bonzini family, are you?
I'm not AAA. I'm from Perfection. Pop the hood.
Okay, no problem. Thanks for helping me out.
Go ahead, crank it over. It was a loose wire on the distributor.
Okay, thanks for stopping. Is there anything I can do for you, like a favor?
Hey, it's all good. Happy holidays.
Well, I gotta get Bella out of the trunk.
Gee, Vito, it was so cold in there.
Hey, honey, get in the car. I know it's cold.
Oh, Vito, you're so good to me.
Honey, I apologize for what I've done.
Ah, Vito, I understand you was having a bad day.
Hey, you know, Bella, that guy from Perfection changed my way of thinking. He showed me how to be nice.
Let's go home now and have a nice dinner.
Yeah, let's go home.
A little bit of kindness during this season can make a world of difference. At Perfection Auto Works, that holiday spirit is year-round. Call Perfection Auto Works at 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
It's the most wonderful time.
This is Dennis Weaver, and you're listening to Liberty Watch. You know, the exchange of ideas is so important to maintain our freedom in this country. And Liberty Watch is a show that promotes freedom.
Listen to Inside Track, Saturdays from 1 to 3 on KDOI, The Voice.
Hartman Glass invites you to its Gallery of Glass showroom. For custom shower doors, tables, and glass enclosures. From boardrooms to an exquisite display case for your valued collectibles. Need a glass conference room in your office? Laser measuring for accuracy. 903-0766 and see them online at hartman-glass.com. That's hartman-glass.com.
Hi, Bill Ding here with another session for Gerson's Building Material. There's nothing else like it. Gerson's is a one-of-a-kind shopping adventure. Doors, wrought iron, rugs, tile, shovel, rakes, and thousands of unique items. Gerson's buys, sells, and trades. Ever need to match a tile from a 1950s bathroom? Gerson's just might have it. How about a door to replace the one that the dog destroyed at half the price of the big stores? A light fixture from the 60s? A hand crank for a casement window? 4726 South Country Club, just north of Irvington. Check out their website at GersonsBuildingMaterials.com. Gersons.
ELECTORAL. Electoral College. We've got a tale to tell.
Cause everyone who graduates becomes a president.
I'm gonna send your vote to college. When you vote for president. And if you'll let me share some knowledge, you'll understand this big event. The folks who wrote our Constitution had the idea for this plan. And it's been used in our elections since our government began.
And coming back, talking a little bit about our Electoral College with Philip Williams of BBSI here in Tucson, and do all kinds of compliance help and insurance for workman's comp and other things like that, and also a brilliant guy that runs it who loves for a hobby reading about the Federalist Papers and if the country had more people like that, it would run better.
Quite possibly. I would love it if we could somehow get the Federalist Papers into the school. I'd love to see a year's worth of that and have the kids come out having read at least 24 or 25 of them coming out of high school so that they understood better the system. Because we have a system of government, right? We don't have – you can't just pick one item that you want to wreck in our system and think that it's going to be okay. And that's sort of my lead into the topic 68, the Electoral College. But I did have one thing I wanted to say, because you were talking about Pirates of the Caribbean and we were talking about 70 and why there's only one president and not three or four or whatever. And it was the phrase, "Don't look at me. I was nothing more than an almost innocent bystander."
Almost.
That would be the form of rule that we would have. And it's kind of sort of what we have right now, actually, when you look at the way the unelected bureaucrats run the country. But 68, yeah, that's where we get into the Electoral College.
In what way was the electoral system designed in the Constitution intended as a calming influence on the populace?
So you have to understand that what the Founding Fathers wanted was that the person who was chosen as president was supposed to have a sense of what the people wanted. And the idea wasn't that you would have the popular person get it. They wanted the executive to represent the broadest cross-section, the broadest group of people in the country. And I think that's borne out quite noticeably in not just the last one election, but the last five or six elections, when you start to look at the concentration of interests in different parts of the country and how they are aligned. But if you do that, if you just take, you know, like right now, the Democratic Party is, I would say, a party of 11 cities. Hmm. Right?
Right. Large cities.
Yeah. The 11 large cities, you know, you Miami, New York, Chicago, Boston, L.A., San Francisco, Portland,
Phoenix, yeah, to some extent.
Yeah. Austin. You know, you go through and you pick. But what's really interesting is, I don't know, did you know that there is a fellow in Illinois who has been somewhat cheekily voted to be the, I don't know if it's the governor or the mayor of Free Illinois, something to that effect. It's Illinois is going through the same problem that California is going through. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole of Illinois is governed by Chicago.
Well,
right?
much of it is, not all of it, but much of it is. Yeah. And the reason Chicago has home rule, so it can fairly well, anything that doesn't pass the legislature by either 75 or 80% may not necessarily apply to Chicago. It's sort of a fiefdom.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but they're suffering. In the rural parts of Illinois, they're suffering just like they're suffering in the rural parts of California.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the hands of a government that is largely catering to the city.
Right.
And the city-state.
And it's a kleptocracy. And a caucusocracy at the same time.
I think Rod might disagree. No.
Rod Blagojevich? Do you know I went to high school with him?
Did you really?
Yeah, Lane Tech.
Yeah, he's quite the reformed personality now.
Oh, so to speak.
Yeah,
he's allegedly
he's figured out how to earn an honest living. But
what is he doing now?
Well, he's mostly commentating and makes money as a TV and radio personality and that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah. They ask him stuff about the Democratic Party, and he'll tell them, you know, all the flaws and whatnot. So it's really interesting.
Why would anybody listen to Blagojevich? Did you listen to some of the tapes of him trying to sell the Illinois seat that was held by Obama?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's, back to the Federalist Papers.
So, yeah, it's what's really interesting is on 68, you learn that essentially our Electoral College is a it's actually a violation of mathematics. Did you know in mathematics it's not legal to take the average of an average or average of averages?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can't take the average of two sets of numbers and then average it together and actually come out with a valid
because
final
the data
result.
Is the underlying data is spoiled.
No, what happens is, and this is what you hear coming from the left side who wants to abolish the Electoral College. You know, they'll tell you, oh well, every vote doesn't. You know, some of the votes didn't count in California. Well, that's true, but the same is also true in Oklahoma, right? The same is also true in Texas. The same is also true in all of the other states of the union because of the method, which is meant to dull
popular
extremism.
Popular faction.
Well, it's meant to dull extremism.
Right. The whole idea is you elect by state, not by the popular vote.
Right. So the popular vote in each state is what ultimately decides where the electoral votes go. So at a state level, the popular vote does actually win. But when you add up the raw votes underneath and you go person by person across the country, that's where you start to see the argument pop up that, well, you know, there's 100,000 votes in California that didn't mean anything. And I'm thinking to myself, well, they did. They just meant something at the state level. They didn't mean something at the national level, and it's your state because, believe it or not, our country is actually supposed to be a country that has a whole lot of states' rights.
Right, exactly. That's the that's the principle of federalism. That's
right.
What it's based on is the idea that you have before there were 50, but however many there were, about 50 laboratories of democracy.
Yeah.
And that everybody could do things the way they thought was best to do, and whatever was best would be – I'll give you a wonderful example of a laboratory of democracy, the right to try legislation that's now federal law started in Arizona, and that was an idea that sprang out of the Goldwater Institute. And it was a good idea. It worked in Arizona where people who are terminally ill could try anything they wanted, even if it wasn't fully approved by the FDA, if they thought it might save their life. And in some cases, it did. And that legislation was so good that President Trump ended up signing a federal version of it.
I did not know that it started here.
It started with it. I'll tell you who it started with. It started with Darcy Olson pushing it in the Goldwater when she was president of the Goldwater Institute about 15 or 18 years ago.
Well, I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, look, there's a lot of things I've learned I didn't know, including why some of my ideas about nuclear power were not great ideas that I learned here when you were a guest. All right. Back to this. Number eight. This quote, I'm going to quote from Federalist 68. This process, did I cut off one of your points?
No, you're good. Go.
Okay. This process of election affords a moral certainty that the office of president will seldom fall to the lot of any man who is not in an eminent degree endowed with the requisite of qualifications. Talents for low intrigue and the little arts of popularity may alone suffice to elevate a man to the first honors in a single state, but it will require other talents and a different kind of merit to establish him in the esteem and confidence of the whole union, or of so considerable a portion of it as it would be necessary to make him a successful candidate for the distinguished office of President of the United States, unquote. Now, my question, how in the wide world of sports does that explain Joe Biden?
Right? It doesn't explain Joe Biden, but I'll tell you what, vis-a-vis Joe Rogan explains Trump, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because at the end of the day, what you're talking about there is the idea that the electors, the presidential electors, actually know who they're voting for. Like they're supposed to know this human. And I think we all understand that that's not actually the way it functions. I don't think the electors know the person they're voting for in the degree that that phrase says they would.
I disagree.
I disagree.
Yeah. I think the electors are people, when you look at who, because we both know people who have, I think we both know people who have been electors.
We do.
Okay.
But and, I don't think that every elector has had 10 meals at Donald Trump's house.
Maybe not 10 meals at his house, but know him more than well enough to not become faithless electors and vote for somebody else.
There would be some, but I would also think that there are some who don't. Now, and that's why I come back around to how Joe Rogan and his impact on this election, where he said, look, if you want to come on my show, the rules are the same for both candidates. It's an endless conversation. We're going to go wherever the conversation takes us. It's going to be questions you might not like, be some questions that you do like. That's fine, but we're going to have an open and honest conversation. And the whole intent there, and that's what the intent in 68 talks about, is that there's supposed to be a relationship between the executive and the people that vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that you know, who is it that was saying that Barron Trump's probably the smartest guy in the most recent election because he's the guy that told his dad to go on Joe Rogan. You know, that sitting down and having that conversation, you know, Trump was like 3 hours late to an appearance because of that interview.
Uh-huh.
At no point in time, if you watch the whole thing, at no point in time did you ever feel like Trump was looking down at his watch trying to figure out how he was going to get to the next thing.
Right.
He understood the rules and he was willing to sit there and have an open and honest conversation about some things, quite frankly, that weren't softball questions for him. They were uptight questions. And the other candidate chose that she wanted to have a bunch of rules and she wasn't going to sit down and have an open and honest conversation.
Well, she wasn't going to be bound by anyone else's rules. She wanted to be in charge. She wanted to be in charge of those rules just the way she wanted to be in charge of the lives of individual citizens in the United States. All right, back after this last break. And, oops, let's try this. That is the wrong break. Let's try this break over here and see what we get. Well, that is the right break. Okay, well, we'll just go back to that third break again, and we're going to keep hearing that same music. It's what do you call it? The Day with the Golf, with Bill Murray. What's the name of that movie? Groundhog Day.
Yeah, Groundhog Day.
here comes again in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios.
Bill Murray and golf is gophers.
Yeah, gophers.
Hello? Honey, I'm doing the best I can. I'm in a blizzard. I'll be home as soon as I can. Of course I'll be careful. All right. See you in a few. Bye. There's a car broke down on the side of the road. I gotta get home. No, I gotta help him. Hey, Mac, you okay?
Hey, you're not with the Bonzini family, are you?
I'm not AAA. I'm from Perfection. Pop the hood.
Okay, no problem. Thanks for helping me out.
Go ahead and crank it over. It was a loose wire on the distributor.
Okay, thanks for stopping. Is there anything I can do for you, like a favor?
Hey, it's all good. Happy holidays.
Oh, I gotta get Bella out of the trunk.
Gee, Vito, it was so cold in there.
Hey, honey, get in the car. I know it's cold.
Oh, Vito, you're so good to me.
Honey, I apologize for what I've done.
Ah, Vito, I understand you was having a bad day.
Hey, you know, Bella, that guy from Perfection changed my way of thinking. He showed me how to be nice.
Let's go home now and have a nice dinner.
Yeah, let's go home.
A little bit of kindness during this season can make a world of difference. At Perfection Auto Works, that holiday spirit is year-round. Call Perfection Auto Works at 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
It's the most wonderful time.
This is Dennis Weaver, and you're listening to Liberty Watch. You know, the exchange of ideas is so important to maintain our freedom in this country. And Liberty Watch is a show that promotes freedom.
Listen to Inside Track, Saturdays from 1 to 3 on KDOI, The Voice.
Hartman Glass invites you to its Gallery of Glass showroom. for custom shower doors, tables, and glass enclosures. From boardrooms to an exquisite display case for your valued collectibles, need a glass conference room in your office? Laser measuring for accuracy. 903-0766 and see them online at hartman-glass.com. That's hartman-glass.com.
Hi, Bill Ding here with another session for Gerson's Building Material. There's nothing else like it. Gerson's is a one-of-a-kind shopping adventure. Doors, wrought iron, rugs, tile, shovel, rakes, and thousands of unique items. Gerson's buys, sells, and trades. Ever need to match a tile from a 1950s bathroom? Gerson's just might have it. How about a door to replace the one that the dog destroyed at half the price of the big stores? A light fixture from the 60s? A hand crank for a casement window? 4726 South Country Club, just north of Irvington. Check out their website at GersonsBuildingMaterials.com. Gersons.
E-L-E. All right, welcome back to last segment of Liberty Watch today. I want to cut the music short so that we have more time with Philip Williams. And Philip, we were just talking about that there's an idea which will, I don't want to go into the text of 68 anymore. It'll take up too much time. Why is it that the electoral, that if we eliminated the Electoral College, there would be 11 cities that run the country?
Well, you get into purely popular vote, right? So you're ending up with what happens for whatever reason. I don't quite exactly understand all of the sociological mechanics of it and whatnot, but people in cities tend to lean one way. People in rural towns, small towns, smaller cities tend to lean the other. And it's probably because of the way the economies function and whatnot. But
I disagree.
What do you think it is?
I think it's self-reliance.
Well, let's go to that for a second. Okay. How far did the average Thanksgiving meal travel to get to the dinner table in the United States?
Probably 900 miles.
Actually, it's just under 1500.
Okay.
If you believe that. I mean, that's a massive thing, right? So what's interesting, because I went to an election night party where I was the token Trump voter. So I'm standing there, and one of the very first questions that one of the folks there to come and ask me about actually was surrounding the Electoral College, and they had no idea how far their food traveled. So here's something interesting. When's the last time you saw a farmer stand up and say, I disagree with the Electoral College?
I don't know that I ever have. They're so too busy farming.
Have you ever seen a person from a small town or, you know, a city of, let's say, 35,000 people show up and say, I disagree with the Electoral College?
Heavens no, that's their only voice.
Right, it's their only voice. They feed us. Those communities feed us. By definition, you need less population any place where you have a large farm. It takes that large farm to feed all of the people in this country. I don't care if we're talking about pigs, chickens, mm-hmm. wheat, corn, whatever you want to talk about. Those areas, by definition, are going to have smaller populations, which means they're going to have lesser vote as far as from a raw count perspective. But they should still have a vote. And what the Electoral College does is it makes sure that people in smaller areas, less populated areas, still have some voice. They may at the end of the day not be entirely controlling, but it makes sure that they have some voice.
Right. What it does is it limits the tyranny of the majority.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Because you get to 51% or, right. You know, let's call it, if you had popular vote, if that was the way that you elected your president, you could literally have 50.1% of the country picking the president and bullwhipping the other 49.9% of the country.
Right.
Right.
Which would be democracy.
Well, it would be democracy, but it might also, you know, I think the founding fathers called that faction. And their entire purpose was that if an idea wasn't good enough, that two-thirds of the country couldn't get behind it, then maybe you needed to go back and rework your idea some more.
And if it was changing the structure of the country, it had to be three-quarters.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because you can't have 51% of the country telling 49% of the country what to do. It's just not going to work. But if you had 68% of the country or 70% of the country picking a direction, well,
you probably will gain enough compliance to have a smooth society.
In popular vernacular, we call that a mandate, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, so when you
have... Of course, the word mandate has kind of changed its meaning over the years, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
True.
I digress.
Yeah. So the whole idea was to water down extreme ideas just a little bit. At the end of the day, you can still win. You know, Trump just won popular vote. He won the Electoral College. He won it both ways, and he picked up seats in both houses. So, you know, by way of looking at things today, we call that a mandate. But you can have something where somebody gets the Electoral College and doesn't get the popular vote.
No, Trump, Trump did the first time.
Yeah, that's the first time.
And it's happened four other times in our nation's history.
Right. And it's what's really interesting is it is an intentional design of the Constitution that if there is that much disagreement, then nothing new gets proposed. Nothing, proposed, but I should say nothing new gets passed. That's a more accurate statement.
All right. Bill, you're on with Philip Williams and Charles Heller. Go ahead. Whoops. Try it now.
What you guys were talking about.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, listening to what you guys were talking about there, it's something that I wish more people would actually spend even a nanosecond thinking about from time to time. You know, those rich, white, bigoted, homophobic white guys that sat down and figured out how to make this country work, they did something that, you know, in most of human history had never even been contemplated. They sat down and thought about how human beings operate. They thought about the consequences of human beings doing the things we're naturally predisposed to do and set up a system that could be self-correcting.
That it would anticipate those actions.
Exactly. And even if sometimes the corrections aren't perfect, it was moving you towards something that could get closer to that perfection in a way no other system has ever been found to work as well.
And it says so right in the document, in order to form a more perfect union, not because we have formed a perfect union, but in order to form a more perfect one.
You know, and that's that statement right there. If our modern day thoughts and processes on the education of the next generation would spend even 5 minutes focusing on that very statement, all of our lives would be a lot simpler.
Agreed. Okay, I'm going to let you go. We're past the 5 minute limit. You have a great day. Great call. And I'd say that opens up a line, but it doesn't. 3 minutes to close. They're yours, Philip.
You're going to give me a whole 3 minutes, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, next time if you want, warn me and we will push and we'll make a 90 minute rather than a 60.
All righty. Are we doing 60 today?
No, we're doing 60 today. I think.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that fits for me. It's you know, the last caller was talking about spending time educating people, and that's really sort of my driving motive for coming on the show and talking about the topic, is getting folks to understand it. I'm not opposed to anybody wanting to change our methods of government. I would say, first, please understand what you're changing. Understand why it was built the way it was.
Right.
Once you understand why it was built the way it was, if you can come up with a twist or an adjustment,
a better way,
then I'm all for hearing it. But let's make sure that we can have a competent conversation about what's going on. So that, you know, that's why when somebody approaches me and says, I want to get rid of the Electoral College, my first question out of my mouth, because we live in a city of a million people, is how far did your food travel to get to your dinner plate? Because there's a lot of people that make your life possible that you'll never shake their hand, you'll never look them in the eye.
Right.
And those
people cannot be disenfranchised.
Right, exactly. I need them. I don't know who grew the corn, that was on my dinner table last night, but I'm sure grateful for the fact that they did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like every time I drive by in somebody's roof on a house in Tucson in July,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's quietly to myself, I'm grateful that there's a man that's willing to get up on that roof and do that job because I don't want to do it.
Right. You're grateful it wasn't you.
Right. And right. and so, you know what? If that guy wants to have a vote, at the, have a voice, I'm all for it. But, you know, we should understand why things exist the way they exist. And it's very humbling. I would encourage anybody who's listening to this, it's very humbling to read just even a handful of these. I think anybody that read 10 out of the mm-hmm. 85 papers would walk away definitely a smarter person and definitely have an appreciation for the psychology that goes into our system of government.
Right. And that when it is change, it not be done, as it says in the Declaration, for light and transient causes.
Right. Right.
That which is what democracy is the will of the people, as opposed to the consent of the governed.
And if you go to popular vote on the president, you will have changing of the system for light and intransient reasons.
Light and transient causes.
Intransient.
I have to let you go because the guest is on hold right now, and
all right.
I got to do station identification. You are a blessing and a lamp unto our feet, and I really appreciate your effort.
Well, thank you very much, Charles.
My pleasure. AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice. Stay tuned for America Armed and Free.